Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Now the big report, that's just a week away. We'll look into the crystal ball and see, well, how cloudy it might be. That'll happen today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Chris Hurt, Extension Ag Economist at Purdue University out of West Lafayette, Indiana. Our panelists today are Bruce Bostard. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois. And Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities from Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. The November 08 soybeans made a new contract high on Friday of this week. Clayton, is there any good fundamental reason at this point for that 08 bean contract to continue to rally, do you think?
To continue to from this point?
Yep.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it certainly could happen. I guess I'm not really expecting it to right now, but I'll tell you, in these markets, it wouldn't be surprising if they did. The fundamental reason, I guess, would be this whole acreage buying campaign that the corn market's involved with. And it just seems like every estimate that we hear for how much corn acreage is going to increase is bigger than the last one. And that being the case, most of the acreage loss would appear to be coming from soybeans. And it looks like this is just not a short-term phenomenon. And it looks like some big players put their money where their mouth was.
Bruce Bostard, welcome to the program. We appreciate you being along. What do you see in the way of the fundamental reasons for the No Beans 08 to rally?
I guess the best reason for that I can see is what we were talking about, jockeying for position for acreage, trying to figure out where we're going to be. And to a big extent, I think the fund's kind of placing their bets ahead of the report.
And Mike Georgie of Allendale.
Well, I think all of them are reasons to do it. I guess some reasons why they couldn't do it is because we do have 3 million more acres of wheat, and a lot of people will probably double crop wheat. And are we really going to be short beans? But I think on the near term, we're probably going to go higher.
Let's stay with the soy complex because it's the one that rallied for the week, had the biggest move. The May contract and the bean pit had a high of $7.75 this week. They're low at $7.49.5 and a settlement price at $7.69.5. It managed a 16-cent gain on the week. November beans for this year at $8.13 were up 19.5 cents. And the big question, of course, is acreage. How much might do you think it will lose when we get to next Friday in terms of acreage year over year?
Boy. Cut right to the chase here.
You bet.
I've been feeling for the last 3 or 4 weeks that the number, that the market was kind of telling us that the switch was going to be bigger than what the market was expecting at the time. And to put that into real numbers, I guess the number that came out Thursday afternoon was 12.7 million acre increase in corn. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see corn increase 12 million, in which case beans, I would guess, would probably lose 8 or 9 million.
And have you got a good number that you're working with on the soybeans at this point?
Well, for the final switch, I guess my ideas are that we're probably going to have to work into that. I'm not sure that producers are totally convinced on what they're actually going to switch right now on it. We might be setting ourselves up for a little bit of a disappointment on what we come up with the numbers out next week. That's not to say that we're not going to end up there. I think we will, but I think we might have a tendency to kind of underestimate the switch on Friday's report.
Now, where you are in terms of location in the state of Illinois and where Chris Hurt is there at Purdue is one of the primary bean-growing areas of the nation. There are more beans grown in that area than most other areas, and I suspect that they're far less likely to switch? And do you think that that's one of the things you've been hearing from your clientele?
That's what I'm hearing. We're going to see some acres switch to corn, not to the extent, we're just a little ways north of the Champaign area here. Some of our soil might be a little bit lighter soil and not quite the quality. So I think that we might see less of a switch. We have planted quite a bit of wheat this last year, partially because of that also. And I think we're going to see less likelihood of switching to corn. Champaign, Piatt County, I think, will be more aggressive on switching to corn than we will.
Mike, when you get on the phone with clientele in the southwestern part of the United States or in those delta regions, they're in the midst of planting at this point. I made note Dave Dickey made note for me, actually, that 48% of the crop had been planted for corn in Texas. And he asked 48% of what when he looked at that crop progress report. That's 48%, by the way, of the surveyed acres. So they call up and they say, how far along are you, to the farmer? And the farmer says, well, I'm 48% along. Have you been able to get an idea from your clientele as to what kind of switch might be happening in those areas that are already planting this season?
Not so much in the Southwest, more in the Delta area. Those guys are really planting a lot more corn. I think the Southwest is probably in the same scenario. I think we are going to be in the same scenario. If the weather's conducive to plant more corn, there's guys that are going to plant more corn that said they may not. If the weather's not conducive and you don't have your nitrogen on and you're getting late, you may not plant as much corn as you want. So I think the numbers right now are not going to mean as much until it comes into late May, June, when we've had the weather and we know if we're going to get the crop in or not.
What do you mean? The wet weather that we've had the past week really isn't something we have to trade?
It's maybe not that we have to trade it, but we are trading it. That's for sure.
Yeah, we are trading the wet weather at this point. We've been trading weather for better than a month now, and it's kind of interesting to watch. Has it made your job as a broker actually a little tougher, or is it more fun to trade when weather's playing such a large part in the marketplace? I'm looking at you.
Okay, there's reflection there. it makes it difficult. I think it, and just the specter of this big report lying out there on the horizon, I don't know about the other guys, but it seems to make my job more difficult because, and understandably so, people are afraid to step out. But the bottom line is it seems like, this report will probably be, I would have to think its impact is probably being overestimated, although it certainly has the potential to provide a real shock. But I do think that shortly after its release, we're already going to be looking at all kinds of reasons why we should be very skeptical of whatever it says. So, we'll move on from there. But I don't know. I'd be tempted to think that it's probably being a little overrated right now.
Bruce, as you take a look over the past couple of weeks, corn, of course, broke. Do you think the needs on the processor's end, on the end user's side, have been met temporarily?
It sure feels that way, that nearby the processor market seems to be satiated. At least the Central Illinois processor market seems to be that way. Gulf basis has been under pressure, so that hasn't really been a factor. If anything, it's the more western needs have been there, but the eastern belt and the center Gulf needs haven't really poked their head up much.
Of course, grains finished like this. May oats at 291. They were up 16.5 cents for the week. I don't know anybody watched that market enough to know why they rallied so much. We'll go on and not worry about them so much. Wheat futures 469.75 in the May on the high side. The low at 452. They settled up 0.75 at 461.5. July up a penny at $4.75 from the corn pit. The May contract 412.5 on the high. The low at 393.25. Remember, these are the composites, so we use both the overnight trade and the day trade when we give you the range for the week. They settled at 403.25, up 3.25 for the week. December futures at 409.75, finished 6.75 higher from last week. And Clayton, we've got a week to go. You've given us a guess or what the trade is going to look at for the number from the acreage report in USDA. What's your number? You talked about trade looking at 12 million acres. Where do you think it'll be?
Oh, I'm sorry. That is my guess is we're going to be somewhere around 12 in the corn, and 8 or 9 million decrease in beans. I don't think the trade is looking for that big of a jump. My guess is that the trade, the average guess, would be more like 9 increase in corn, maybe 9.5, and beans probably maybe a 7 million acre decline.
And so you're on the very top side. If your number comes in, what do you think happens to the marketplace?
I think that would be perceived as bearish corn and bullish beans, you know, if it did in fact come out along those lines.
What number are you working with for corn acres?
I guess I'm more in the 9 range for this report, but I think that'll be understated. I think it'll go up from there.
And Allendale?
I'd agree. I mean, Allendale thinks we're going to have 12 million more acres of corn, but I think the government is not going to get off of their 8.6 million that much. They may increase it to 9, and that's why I'm starting to feel the report is going to be here and gone, and we're going to be trading weather for the next 4 weeks or 6 weeks.
Anything that a producer ought to do before we get into next week's report to protect themselves one way or the other?
Well, it's like, you know, what we've been saying. I think you buy some puts, protect the downside, but everybody seems to be bullish and they're not. I mean, I'm willing to buy calls on stuff that I've already sold, but I think you take protection because it could be anything.
Yeah, I think you should, exactly like Mike said, these are tremendous values. Anything can change. I mean, there's all kinds of moving targets out there. I mean, our conversation is completely, you know, centered on supply and nothing to do with the demand. There's a lot of questionable numbers out there, and we know things are going to change a lot. So I do think that a protective strategy is called for. But I guess the one caution I would voice is that I think it would be more risky to, you know, play a hunch and like be an aggressive seller in either corn or beans than it would be to be, you know, like a similar seller in both of them. In other words, I think the biggest risk a guy could take would be to be, you know, just a corn seller and not a bean seller or vice versa, because I think almost by definition the number will probably tend to be bullish one and bearish the other.
When we talked with Dan Zwicker Thursday afternoon, he told us that AgriVisor's cash positions for both corn and soybeans, new and old crop, had been added to. I think they were up to about 20 or 25% sold on corn and soybeans. I think that's a decent idea, and are farmers actually following through with some of this? Have you been buying at Ludlow?
We have really not been buying very much for 2 or 3 weeks. It's been quiet. We had historically very, very large new crop positions on early, but it's flattened out. We haven't bought much for the last several weeks, and when you look at the numbers now, they don't look that out of line. So sales have been pretty moderate.
In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with Purdue Ag economist Chris Hurt, taking a quick look at the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Futures at the CME settled like this for the live cattle. They had the April high at 98.80, a low at 96.90. Their settlement price up a dollar even at 98.10. March feeder cattle at 104.35 were off 47.5 cents for the week. April lean hogs finished the week like this, 65.10 on the top side, the low at 62.95, and their settlement price down 83.5 cents at 63.57.5, and the March pork bellies at 103 finished the day a dollar higher.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Spring weather gained a solid toehold across Illinois this week. Temperatures averaged from 2 to 4 degrees above normal this week across Illinois. The highlight of the week was Wednesday, when all but the northern quarter of the state enjoyed afternoon temperatures in the 70s. The warmer weather was accompanied by an increase in atmospheric moisture, and that in turn led to showers and thunderstorms scattered across Illinois. A tornado watch and severe thunderstorm watch covered parts of Illinois during the pre-dawn hours on Thursday, but severe weather was limited to several reports of nickel-size hail in northern Illinois. The moist southerly flow interacting with the approaching cold front produced heavy rain across northern Illinois Wednesday night and early Thursday, with 1 to 2 inch amounts in northern Kane and southern McHenry counties and up to 3 inches in eastern Lake County. Amounts were significantly less further south. However, the presence of the cold front kept the threat of rain alive across the northern two-thirds of the state through the end of the week. The threat of rain will exist for most of Illinois through next week as a series of weather systems travel through the Midwest. The best chances for rain in Illinois will come on Monday and Tuesday, and then again Thursday through Saturday. Temperatures will average above normal next week, with afternoon highs probably approaching 70 on at least 1 or 2 days. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Commodity Week on WILL AM 580. Our panelists in studio today are Mike Georgie of Allendale, out of Mahomet, Illinois, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities from Champaign, Illinois, and Bruce Bostert. He's the general manager of Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. We're joined on the phone line now by Chris Hurt, ag economist from Purdue University. Good afternoon to you, Chris.
Hello, Todd.
Thanks for being with us today. Hey, let's go through the cattle on feed numbers that came out Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock Central Time on feed, March 1 at 96, placed in February at 104, marketed in February at 107, and they were to varying degrees all within the average trade guesses and ranges. What did you make of the numbers?
Well, I think that's right. Probably not much keen for markets on this particular report because they're pretty close to expectations. The placed number was a little bit higher for February than what we had been anticipating, but it turns out the marketing number was a little bit larger, so overall the on-feed number was a bit smaller. And I think, Todd, following along on what your panel is talking about, what we have to recognize is that as we look at these higher corn prices, certainly the cattle feeding industry has responded. We look back over the last 4 months, going back Nov, Dec, Jan, and Feb, we've reduced placements in the feedlot by 10%. So we've gone from where we had about 4% more cattle in the feedlot back in November 1. By March 1, we're down that 4%. So I think that's another one of the keys we're looking at as we get the reports on March the 30th. We look at the stocks report. We're going to also be able to get some measure of just how much feed use perhaps has been reduced for the winter feeding, and that certainly can have some implications for us potentially to take some of the feed use out of our balance sheets as soon as we see that report.
Yeah, why don't you go through some of that for us very quickly, and we can talk about that quarterly grain stocks report, which will be released the same day, same morning that the acreage report is due out. Maybe work in some of these numbers from the cattle on feed report, what the disappearance might be, and where you feel ethanol production and demand from that industry will work in as we go into the fall, and how much corn we might have on hand, frankly.
Yeah, and Todd, I don't have those specific numbers in front of me, but I think you're characterizing the issue that's out there. We know particularly on corn, we're so very close to the margin in terms of the carryover stocks that we're going to have this year in the inventory. We have ethanol plants not only that are coming online where it's a little bit hard to gauge just what the utilization is going to be. We also know those ethanol plants aren't just running at 100% of capacity, but probably 103 to 104% of capacity. So we don't have really super good measures on all of that, and especially what is going to be coming online. And especially what we don't have good measures on is the feeding use. We know that the livestock sector has made some adjustments, and I think reasonable to anticipate that the adjustments weren't very large when we saw the December 1 stocks number, simply because we hadn't had long enough for the livestock industry to adjust. But I think this number is going to give us some of those indications. And the other uncertainty we always have is how accurate was last year's crop estimated, so we begin to get a better feel if that crop was accurate, was too high, or too small.
Yeah, Chris, the feed number for this last, for the current year, for 2006-2007, we've got it 5.975 billion bushels, and it seems like a lot of the numbers I've heard for this next year are talking about taking 200 or 300 million off of there. I mean,
yes.
Have you begun to pencil in a number? I mean,
well, yeah, I've got a number actually down to 5.6 billion. Again, two really very large things coming in: the substitution of distillers' grains for more corn directly for corn, and then some trimming of the herds. Now, again, what we've tended to look at is this $4 mark on corn on the cash side is really a point at which the livestock industries pretty much across the board are really having to make some adjustments. Prices higher than that mean we get a more rapid cut, and obviously prices lower than that maybe not quite as quickly. So I think we are headed down on that corn usage. I think there's a reasonable chance we could see some adjustments such that our feed use may be somewhat lower than the USDA's estimate here for this 2006-2007 crop, and that could be coming out of this March 30 report.
And they're still relatively high on their feed use per animal unit, too, aren't they, on this current supply-demand numbers?
Well, that's right. And again, historically, when we have these years where we have to ration, we do see a pretty substantial cut on the livestock sector. Unfortunately, on that feeding sector, it's also a residual. It is all the errors that are in the calculations reside in that feeding number. So we do see some fairly big variation in rationing years like this. But I think it's another one that is a very important report that we're going to be seeing here in within the next week and give us a much better feel for the whole livestock sector.
Do you feel that we're going to have a lot more feeders and heavier feeders coming into these feedlots later in the year, ones that were maybe placed on back on pasture or on grass later in the year and didn't go to feedlots, or are we going to see a big influx and maybe more cattle or corn used? Or
well, I think that's certainly the implication. The calves obviously still out there. Not that much change in the breeding herds, or calf crop is basically near the same size or slightly larger. We're just delaying the time we're putting those calves in the feedlot, putting another 200 to 300 pounds of gain with roughages. So this, I think, has given us more strength in the nearby positions for cattle than we would have anticipated, say, at the beginning of the year. So we're pushing up near that $100 mark on finished cattle right now. It probably is overall more depressing towards the tail end of the year and on into 2008.
You know, earlier in the year, you had made some calculations about when and how an ethanol plant could stay profitable and how high the price of corn might have to go. Have you recalculated that, and can you give us some of those data?
Yeah, did those numbers early this week, and we were about $5.10 per bushel. And what we're calculating is for a new ethanol plant, for new construction to be built, what would be their break-even levels. So very strong right now. But again, we do have ethanol prices at about $2.30. As we saw, of course, escalation in the crude oil and gasoline, we also saw that in ethanol. Now, over the rest of this year, particularly as we get into the later summer and fall, futures markets for ethanol are in the range of about 30 to 35 cents per gallon lower. So the budget's running on out for late this year, and let's say really after about August of this year, would be more a break-even in the $4 range, 4 to 4.25 a bushel. So we don't think those ethanol plants are running real flush with capital right now, with margins, we should say. And certainly when we saw crude prices get down to $50, back in January, a number of the ethanol plants being planned certainly were thinking about putting those plans on hold. So energy is part of the dynamics now, as we all know. But right now, the margins are such that it's encouraging to continue to build the ethanol plants.
Are these margins you're talking about, is that using the increased cost of materials? And
that's correct. That would be for new construction plants. And we're pushing up near $2 per gallon of construction cost, a capacity 100 million gallon plant in the $180 to $200 million construction cost range.
Have you got an estimate on acreage for next week?
Well, I've been using a little over 10 million, about 10.5 million. I think we continue to see tremendous incentives financially, and again, as several of the market panel talked about, getting more bean acres. The economics, as far as our budgets we look at Purdue, would suggest we would have to have soybeans up near $10 a bushel to really start convincing many to come over to soybeans for next year. So I think the numbers are going to be high. And again, I tend to feel like USDA will be up in the 9, 9.5. The actual numbers will be in the 10 to 11 when we finally get the acreage numbers as we get to June.
On occasion, you have penned an article, I think, called Boom and Bust Cycles, or you've watched the boom and bust cycles in agriculture. Are you concerned at this point about farm economy at all?
Well, that's always certainly the case for those of us in the academic community that have that opportunity. And, you know, we don't know whether the whole energy sector and the biofuels, which looks at this point like it has so much promise, so we see the president talking about 35 billion gallons of renewable fuels or alternative fuels. We see Obama, Harkin, and Lugar with a proposal go to $60 billion. That would suggest a massive, long period of 20 years of increase in positive goodwill for agriculture. On the other hand, we know that things can change, politics can change, energy price complex can change, and if we don't see the political follow-through and the political will, then we know how markets operate. People eventually, after a few months or years, build in those expectations that it's going to be a long-term, years and years of good times, and then that's what sets us up for the potential to have the downside. But again, I think we're early in that. Generally, you see 3 to 5 years of very positive on the boom side.
On that note, what's at risk, do you think, with $4 corn and $8 beans as we go through the farm bill debate?
Well, again, I don't see a lot of risk at this particular point. Obviously, we all know there clearly could be 50 cents downside. Soybeans, I think, again, you talked about those earlier. We're in a process of repricing a lot of agriculture. If we're going to have corn in the $3.50, $4 plus range, then soybeans over a longer period of time have to be repriced more in the $8.50, $9, $9.50 range. And many other products that compete for the land are going to have to be repriced upward. So I think a lot of traders are out there looking for what is cheap when you have taken so much acreage out of the United States for the biofuels, and that means anything that competes for acres is going to have to be repriced.
And finally, if you could, if you have an idea where most of the fresh corn acres might come from, could you tell us that?
Well, obviously, the fresh corn acres, the majority come from the Midwest simply because of just the sheer volume. Percentage-wise, we're going to see the South, I think, with a pretty high percentage shifting out of the cotton acreage. And then spring wheat also, I think we're going to see a probably smaller spring wheat acreage and see some numbers there.
Chris, we appreciate you being with us today.
It's been my pleasure.
Chris Hurt, ag economist from Purdue University, joins us from his West Lafayette office. Time now for a final word from our panelists in studio, and we'll start with Mike Georgie of Allendale.
Yeah, I'd say pull your hats down tight because it's going to be a wild and exciting ride.
And Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator.
Yes, also an interesting week up ahead, and we'll get to Friday and we'll get the report out, totally ignore it, and start trading weather again.
And Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities.
Well, I'd have to say it's not the report to try to outguess it and be a hero on, because there's just too much potential exposure there. But on the other hand, I think a person would be making a mistake to go into this without having sold or protected anything.
Our thanks to Chris Hurt and Clayton Pope, Bruce Bostard, and Mike Georgie. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week, something to keep in mind. You can also always access Commodity Week and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, the weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oilseeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at willuiuc.edu.